I waited for the turn the way nature waits for the thaw. Each year had forced me to be familiar with the accent of the wind and the drawl of the rain. I mapped the displaced stars and learned the shades of local fallen leaves. For the shift of the seasons can mesmerize you anywhere, if you afford them the time. I got good at driving on the wrong side of the road, at saying "can I get" instead of "can I have" whenever I go down to the store. There is an easy glossary of basic terms that I make a point of not using. But you took to these words with gusto. You began to crank out the couple of dozen nouns that would give the false impression we were fitting in. This wooden house with wooden floors and wooden picket fence, this long garden of tall trees in which we park 2 4x4s, this flagpole above the porch on which, on Patrick's Day, we flew our colors, these empty rooms, despite the efforts of TV. We don't even look Irish. One tale down the town has me Dutch and you a seedling from Spanish Flanders days. No one cares, anyway, as the consensus curfew cuts in early and the lights in the houses dim and die as the folk retire for the next day's toil and the commute to that city. You have a little job, the local bookstore. You open around 10 and work with a woman 3 times your girth, 5 times your vocal force, and half your age. I envy you this colleague, and I envy you this friend. Such engagement has kept you sane. Well, I don't have to work, and I won't. And so I usually go for a drive. There is a fabled ragged shore. It looks like any ragged shore. The waves crash in with reflections of the clouds. Their repeating pulse is Atlantic. I have thrown stones at it, and sticks that your nameless dog retrieves. Dog crawled out of the growth at the back of the garden. Dog rummaged in the bins and fed himself, until one day you filled up a bowl with some past sell-by-date chicken wings from a barbecue you did not feel able to attend. Dog has stuck around ever since. I built him a mimic of our wooden house, a crooked kennel painted white. It's a shoddy example of bad workmanship and lets in the wind and rain. But I am proud of it, and your dog is glad of shelter. He jumps into the car and joins me in my trips to the ragged shore. My mind is the only part of me that has traveled back. It makes nocturnal raids. Prowling around the defunct firm, its empty branches and stockpiled shopfront signs. I read about it online as the inquiries get postponed. I recognize the names. I hope one or two get off. You say you sold another book of whaling slang to another new enthusiast. You tell me this every week or so. It's always the occasional map and this book of whaling slang. It's only $10. A decent memento of the region. I bought it myself early on. Well, the truth is I never paid. Little crimes sharpen the wits and finely tune the moral compass. The ragged shore was the sphere of operation for the speakers of this whaling slang. I adopted their outmoded words as a coded proof of wary integration. It was a set of adventurous terms that kept my imagination alive. I'd knuckled down for a while back home and worked too hard. It meant we had done quite well. Money was not a problem, for I got us out in time. 6 more months and the whole show came down. I have been asked how I knew it was all going wrong, but I make no claims about it. I was merely worn out, sick of it all. We had become a functioning part of a social shell. I never had any friends and hated to hear the dinner yarns I told when drunk. I'd been the wrong side of the last economic ditch and told you we were recession kids, always out of sync with the economy. Your study of literature had failed to get you even a teaching job, and the dull 1980s disappointed you and drained off all your ambition. You stopped writing poems. Some craphead guy left you behind and went to London. I always hated hearing about him, but I suppose his loss was mine to turn into a gain. I survived those years intact, always sneering at their failure and success. I lived abroad in survival mode, teaching my native tongue to captains of industry in a city that never slept. I got out of there just in time, too, almost too fond of drinking and wandering around bars in reverence at the age gap between me and downbeat locals. For those years, I never had a house. I never had a job. I never really had a girlfriend. I never had a car. I never had a washing machine. I never had a hope. I liked to carry this heroic catalogue of specific failures. But then I began to engage. Some knowledge of a foreign language became an unlikely key. I got involved in a market. I took on a team. We ran the game around currency and exchange. As the decade rolled on past the false fear of the year 2000 bug and the Twin Towers, I found myself on top. It would never continue. I told you that. It was petering out from the moment it all got started. I didn't see quality. I didn't see value. I didn't see talent in the colleagues who were drifting to the top. But your eye closed in on opportunity. You saw what could be done. From the first purchase of a small Dublin red brick home to the second and third. Then you bought the petrol station with a vast forecourt and a closed-down pub and its car park. It really was that easy, with a mortgage broker, our confident smiles, and a selection of lies. We paid X and sold at Y or Z. Recession kids get older, but they stay distrustful of the boom. We'd committed to a car and a modest house to actually live in, and a necessary range of consumer durables. We bought dearer wine, and you drank it indoors, and I wandered again around late-night bars. I drew up the midnight froth, always ill at ease in the places aimed at me. I stayed out late and liked to be alone. I saw you in the morning and gave out about my city's empty pursuit. We had no sense of purpose, nothing much to share, but we were recession kids and soldiered on. I harbored images of something out at sea, a benign monster that lurked, a submarine. It could dive at dawn and disappear. It could swallow us whole and take us away. You'd never had a life abroad, and I could make you see it as fertile soil. You knew we'd left everything too late, but what else could we do? A lone couple, we left the economy in our wake and washed up on this other shore. You hate your life over here. Behind some happiness, you know it's a mistake. You don't miss your family or friends because you don't care for people. You wouldn't miss me if I disappeared. If I did not come home with your dog, you wouldn't miss me any more than I would miss you. As the twig sinks into the water off the ragged shore, I see your dog race off after it. I get into the car and snap the central lock as the beast looks up at me, scratching to be let in. I hate these 4x4s. As I drive off up the sand path and let him run along, there is barking and frenzy, but they leave me untouched. I take an interstate but turn back soon enough, regaining my instinct, and go over to the right side when I see a truck ahead. This road brings me home, through the dreary dormitory town. I pull into a cafe where they refuse to know me, and drink 2 refills of awful coffee. I slap down some dollars and leave after a cursory trip to the restroom. I drive up to our house and park by the empty kennel. I could drive over it. I could destroy it. My footsteps are hollow on the floor. I have a wooden heart that beats beneath this wooden floor. The book sits there on the shelf, pristine again, lacking the marks of my perusal. Is it really the same copy? Or have you replaced it again? I open the book of whaling slang and sit back in my chair. I push the covers back against the spine. I read the familiar terms, the things I have grown to love. I look at the illustrations of men with harpoons and rowing boats, of dark, hulking forms beneath the waves. I had defaced the book, drawing mustaches and glasses on the whalers, harpoons sticking out of their backs. I drew wooden legs and eye patches. In the water, I planted form after form of dark, menacing sea monsters. I cast a grimace of suffering on the face of the innocent whale. The phone never rings, and it doesn't ring now. I take the book of whaling slang and go back out to the car, but decide to walk back down the road. The autumn chill is a creeping thing, and all the trees sway in the breeze. I point myself towards the bookshop and the sign that says Village Bookstore. 4x4s drive past. Maybe someone waves. There is not much of a sidewalk in these parts. A book in the hand in the open always feels like a Bible. I open it and read a bit as I walk along. I have retained these terms in my mind, but enjoy them written down. I drop the book and notice the leaves. Yellow, a little brown, no longer green. They have just begun to turn. If you let such things take hold, they'll mesmerize you. It's only Wednesday, and that can be called midweek. I grate the book against the wooden fence that leads to where you work. I have always liked that flapping sound. I see you and your corpulent colleague waiting inside. I stand there, determined this time to bring the book back.
That was Whaling Slang by John Fleming, read by Gary Murphy, a shortlisted story from the 2014 RTE Radio Francis McManus Short Story Competition. The series of this year's 25 shortlisted stories continues tomorrow night with Chrysalis by Leslie Cassidy. It'll be read by Barbara Nicoive. You can hear the stories on the programme website on rte.ie/radio1/Francis McManus Short Story. The series producer is Cliona Nianluan.